Well, we're on the back nine of the week. It is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Mark Rowe once again in for Brian Hayes alongside, once again, Dave Poulin. We were together on Monday, and I didn't just say back nine of the week because I know how much you love golf, but we got some huge stories out there, one including Dundas, Ontario's Mackenzie Hughes, and I will always say Dundas because I spent the first 6 years of my life in that beautiful town. But also at around 4:25, Jerry D joins us. And Jerry D, regardless of what's going on in his world, is a good guest on any show. He's funny. He can talk sports.
He's
pretty fired up about the face-off.
We have a topic. By the way, in Dundas, does it say home of Mark Rowe and then in brackets and Mackenzie Hughes?
No, definitely.
Does it say that? When you drive into Dundas.
Because I left when I was really, when I say I left, technically I stayed in the same city because Dundas is part of Hamilton. Now, if you talk to people.
They will never forget you, Mark. They will never forget you. They looked me up years later. I left Timmins when I was a little guy. They found me years later.
Well, maybe I need to be a little more successful for them to latch out to me.
Keep going, you know. My friend. Keep going.
Yeah, but a Canadian.
This will be fun. I'm looking forward to the first time I met Jerry was actually when I was coaching in college. And he was a guest of our athletic director and their family down at Notre Dame. So
I thought you were going to say you were recruiting him or something.
No, no. I was recruiting him for the golf team.
Oh. Yeah, he's a pretty good golfer, and everyone's looking forward to the face-off. It's James Duthie, Jeff O'Neill versus Kyle Dubas and Jerry D. And it's if the golf is as good as the war of words going on Twitter, this is going to go down.
It's only Thursday.
I know.
It's only Thursday. We're just heating this war up.
Yeah. So
we got some good talent on and off the course here, without a question.
Yeah, it should be good. And Mackenzie Hughes, speaking of heating up, a 60 today. Had a chance at 59, missed the 40-footer on 18, but that's the Canadians have been very solid in this very short return from the pause of the season. And it's whether it's Corey Connors or Adam Hadwin, the Canadians have been in contention. They've been in the mix. And Mackenzie Hughes shooting a 60, he beat out a pretty good round by Rory McIlroy today.
I think there's a pretty strong analogy here between the Canadian group of golfers we have right now and Mike Weir's success. And as the conversation switches to basketball and Vince Carter, I think it's a really, you could look at those two situations and say the influx of young Canadian basketball players that are coming is just remarkable. Well, so is the young group of golfers. And, they had that great Masters win in 2003 to look at with Mike Weir and have watched him play through his brilliant career. And I think it's a huge factor. I really do. I think it's, it's kept a lot of them on the course. They have he and Corey Connors also have the Kent State tie. They both went to the same school and were teammates down there. But it's a good young group of Canadian golfers. And when you watch that leaderboard, it's so cool when they show that Canadian flag up there. And right now it's at the top by a margin against some pretty good names.
So he started on the back nine. So he started on 10. 29 on that back nine.
That's lighting it up pretty early, isn't it?
That's not bad to kick off.
A lot of guys are quitting after nine.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys
I had a 29.
After nine, they're like, okay, let's get the travel plans going. I'm probably done after Friday. You brought up Vince Carter, and the reason why, if you haven't heard by now, he is officially retiring. We've been waiting for, I feel like, almost 10 years for him to kind of pull the chute on his career, but it's remarkable that he's had a 22-year career. And it brings up the question that we have asked for about 10 years. Do the Raptors, honor him by retiring his number? His legacy has changed over the years. I think time heals some of those wounds. He's kind of in that, I think of Eric Lindros in the way that his legacy in Philadelphia was and now is, because you can't question the impact that a player like Vince Carter had on the city, on this country, on that organization, and how good he was. But the exit was as bad as, the good moments there. They kind of go hand in hand. You can't talk about one without the other. And a lot of fans, including the guy who hosts this show, Brian Hayes, have a real tough time honoring a guy who essentially demanded to be traded from the city.
Well, I think the fans at a certain point would. I don't think that's affected the young group that went on to be impacted on the court with him. And, you know, if you're looking at young kids, they knew how electrifying he was. That's why they wanted to play the game. And the Raptors coming in at that time, you know, you couldn't get a Leaf ticket. All of a sudden, there was a new demographic available, a new product available, a new sport available, and a new superstar available. And the group that grabbed onto him, quite frankly, yes, it was a disappointing departure. Yes, he demanded out. All that doesn't matter to them, Mark. It really doesn't. It matters to them what he brought their love of the game and how he impacted their playing the game. And just as we've talked about the young Canadian golfers, the young Canadian basketball players, and there's a lot more coming as well. And it really, really a huge impact. And I think that is a number. And I've remained close to the Philadelphia situation. So I've watched what's happened with Eric Lindros as he has been re-embraced by the city. And a lot of times it's individuals. And interestingly enough, you know, the most acrimonious relationship initially was obviously Bobby Clark and the Lindros family. And yet that's one that was mended because Bobby Clark is still a big part of the Flyers organization. And he was all for this mending. And now Eric, I think recently has officially been named a spokesman, one of the maybe three or four official ambassadors of the Flyers. And he's been down to all the events in the 50th year anniversary of expansion a couple of years back. They brought some of us back a number of times. I think I went back seven times that year for different events. And Eric was a part of a lot of them. Captain's Night, he was a part of, and Playoff Heroes, I believe he was a part of. And that was the start of it, but it was really probably his relationship with Paul Holmgren that mended things and then took it over. And I've watched that be repaired to the nth degree right now, and I have no reason to think that Vince Carter's legacy here can't be the exact same way.
Right, and we'll be joined by Jack Armstrong at 6:05 with his take on Vince and what he meant to the city. And but I should correct myself, not really the city, the whole country.
And, it is and the country.
The difference between an athlete like Vince Carter and what he did to the Raptors and Eric Lindros is, you know, he took basketball to another level in Canada, in Toronto. As you mentioned, you know, the athletes that looked up to him as well and what that'll mean. But, you know, you wonder if they don't trade for Vince Carter on draft day, you know, and if Vince Carter doesn't win the slam dunk and all those things happen, do the Raptors exist? Like, do the Raptors go down the same path as the Vancouver Grizzlies? Different cities, different, you know, financial backing, you know, and I'm maybe being a little hyperbolic here, but, you know, they went from kind of the expansion team with a kind of a weird name, the Raptors, and Isaiah Thomas was in, and then now is he out, and you know, and you look forward, and it's a totally different generation now, but NBA champions, and you know,
well, Mark, who had a bigger impact on the, you know, on the city? And this may seem like a crazy question. Kawhi Leonard was here for a year, a year. And look at the impact he had. And he left of his own accord. But he was here for a year and he won a championship. And how many people in those stands watching those games last year are going to be impacted in a manner?
Huge.
And so having the impact that Vince Carter did over a number of years, I think that's a fair hypothetical too, between those two guys.
Yeah.
And looking at it and saying, you know, both had huge impacts on the country because the Raptors are the only NBA team in Canada.
Yeah. And again, because Kawhi is so quiet and he wasn't saying, you know, like Vince Carter did the interview with John Thompson about how he doesn't want to dunk anymore. And there was a sense of he was giving up on the Raptors, and there was the injuries, and obviously forcing the trade, and the trade was so bad. You know, Kawhi had the freedom to leave because of free agency, and, you know, he complimented.
But he still left after a year.
But he left after a year, and there's people that are upset with him. You know, that he didn't stay with Toronto, and that he may have toyed with the Raptors or toyed with Masai, and you know, the trips to the restaurants and going to private schools to you know, bring his daughter and set up tuition, all those kind of things. And, oh, no, I'm going to the LA Clippers. And it's like, well, why didn't you just go in the first place, right?
Like, he was covering every contingency. That's what he was doing. He was preparing like he prepares for a basketball game, and he was making sure he had all his bases covered.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Carter's situation, obviously very different, but an impact for a longer period of time. And that just means he connected with more people.
Yeah, well, You know, and just like the explosion and what happened, and it's, you know, we're a little now more than a year removed from that championship run. You just think of like the crowds. Like I know the parade was, we hit the anniversary not that long ago, and seeing those crowds and thinking that's a totally different world right now. And how our biggest problem was, is Kawhi going to stay in Toronto? And now it's just, can we play?
You know, and look at the guys he impacted and the team that was left on the court. You've still got one of the NBA favorites on the court right now. And the guys he had an impact on while he was here, and I would say the same thing about Carter. He may not have had a direct impact, but he had a direct impact on the organization. And that's in many ways very, very significant.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, you have seen that throughout your career is, you know, players who have had, and it's not just necessarily on the court, on the ice. You know, it's what's happening around as well and developing the game. So, again, Jack Armstrong will join us at 6:05 with more on Vince Carter and his legacy as he retires after 22 years and his best years in a Toronto Raptors jersey. Craig Button will join us at 5:05. Yesterday on the show, we had Jerome McGinley. He headlined the Hockey Hall of Fame class. No one was surprised with that. I know you weren't surprised with that. But there's, you know, we're now almost 24 hours removed, and there's a lot of hockey fans out there who aren't exactly thrilled with the whole class. There's a lot of Alex McGillney fans out there.
Mm-hmm. There are.
And they're outweighing the Kevin Lowe fans out there.
I think two totally different situations. But
well, and totally
continue.
Different players and generations.
Yeah,
and
very much
you
so.
Know, and especially in this city, Alex McGillney isn't really known as a Maple Leaf, although he had a good couple of years with the Maple Leafs. You know, he played around. But I know that you were on earlier today on First Up defending Kevin Lowe being a Hockey Hall of Famer. And you have a better perspective than most because you're on the ice against him and you had to go up against him and all those tough Oiler teams in Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, I don't know if I was as much defending him. I think it's a really good choice. And I don't think it needs defending. There are naysayers that say, well, he just played for really good teams. Well, he was the second best defenseman on one of the great teams of all time, one of the great dynasties of all time. And the fact that we were laughing about his, you know, his little faux flex studio behind him, because mm-hmm. behind him, Mark, there would have been six Stanley Cups.
Right.
Six Stanley Cups. And he was in many ways a glue guy for a young, and he wasn't much older than that group, but he seemed to be the elder statesman of that group. And did a lot of holding it together, you know, at critical times. He was a really, really good player. I knew where he was on the ice. And that's my mark of a good player. When I stepped on the ice, the first guy you looked for was number 77. Where was mm-hmm. Coffee? Where was he on the ice? You know, how could you find him? And then you knew where Kevin Lowe was, but it was a different kind of knowing. He was such a good defensive player. He was always in position. He was, you know, never caught up ice. He didn't go up ice very much. So he shouldn't be counted for just offensive stats. And I think his contribution to the game, and that's a huge factor, is very, very significant. And I watched this Hall of Fame with such interest. I know a number of the people on the board. And if you ask me about the Hall of Fame, the most critical aspect of it is to keep the rotation proper of the 18 people that make the decisions. And when I say proper, I mean a full mix of opinions and a full mix of personalities. And yes, former players, but also, you know, you've got people on the board like Mark Chipman, you know, the owner of the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have different voices and different viewpoints. And the conversations, I'm sure, are incredibly healthy and incredibly passionate. And the McGillney fans are absolutely in the right. Is he going to be a Hall of Famer someday? I think he will be. It wasn't his year. And I saw him at his absolute best, Mark.
Yeah.
76 goals, 127 points. I played in the same division as him. I saw him far too much. 2 years in a row, we not only played our 7 or 8 games a year, we also played them in the playoffs. The year before, I believe, we beat them in 7. We lost in 4 straight in the year that he had those big numbers. I saw him at his best. He and Pat LaFontaine were electric. Mm-hmm. You talk about game planning for a team. You were game planning for 2 offensive players on that team. They were that significant. And I believe Alex McGillney will be a Hall of Famer. And to not get in this year, you know, people were chosen for different reasons at different times. And you've always got an inclusion of some of these older players. And you say, well, how can a guy be passed over? He is a Hall of Famer or he isn't a Hall of Famer. But the way this is structured and the fact that older players are voted in on a continuous basis, I think that Kevin Lowe is a Hall of Famer.
Do you like that the Hall of Fames throughout the leagues do have different systems? Like when you think of, especially when I think of baseball, you know.
600 writers maybe?
Yeah, and you have such a larger cast of voters, and you also, you know, you can be voted in, you know, the Veterans Committee can vote you in as well. Like, is that sort of one of the, for lack of better words, the cool things about each Hall of Fame is that they are unique in that way? Or should major leagues kind of follow the lead of each other? I don't know how you can all work perfectly together, but it's funny that one is a small little group on the hockey side of things, and not to say they're obviously very credible sources to judge who should be going in, but it's so different in baseball and so different in football.
When you have 600 writers, which I believe is what baseball has, 500 or 600 writers, how often did those writers see the players play or did see the players play? And there's famous stories about pure, absolute first ballot Hall of Famers not even being on a ballot at any point. And so I'd rather have a passionate group. Now, once again, I talk about the makeup of that group being very, very important, and I'm not sure how the ins and outs goes. I know they're there for 3 years, I believe. They can be reelected, but it's set up so every year it can change over. It has the ability to change over and get new people in there, and I think that's very important, the makeup of that group. But I also know a number of people on that group and how serious and passionate they take that responsibility. And I would rather have that than a baseball writer in a town who doesn't go to games live and gets his information somewhere else and haphazardly fills out a Hall of Fame ballot. I don't believe that's the way to do it. Now, all that being said, I did have goosebumps the first time I visited Cooperstown.
Yeah.
I was there last December. It was unbelievable to me to walk into that place. Like, it was so cool. And, you know, I was a big baseball fan. I was a huge Expos fan and a huge Blue Jays fan through their early years, and followed it very, very closely. And then because of my affiliation and location to the city of Chicago, became a big Cubs fan. Because when you're in college, you watch them in the afternoon. What did you do? You didn't go to class. You watched the Cubs play. Mm-hmm. That's what you did. They were the only ones playing day games. And so, you know, I followed various teams, both leagues, and loved the game, which is the right way to do it. Right now, I prefer the way hockey does it. And that's knowing the 12 people on that, or the 18 people on that voting committee for the Hall of Fame.
There seems to be fewer agendas, and maybe I'm just ignorant on the hockey side, but there are, you know, there's a reason why certain writers didn't want to vote in players is because of the relationship that they had with them. But,
exactly.
But you're right. In terms of just the physical Hall of Fame, baseball beats everyone. Like Cooperstown, small,
it's pretty
little,
cool. The way they've done their live event
cottage country town that is dominated by that Hall of Fame. So that is very cool. Speaking of baseball, the Toronto Blue Jays hoping to play in Toronto this season. We'll have more on that with Scott Mitchell at 4:45. But as mentioned, coming up next, he is the host of Family Feud. But more importantly, he will be part of the face-off next week at TPC Toronto. Jerry D joins us on Overdrive after this break. Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes this week. My co-host for today and tomorrow is Dave Pullen. And a reminder that the 4 o'clock hour is brought to you by LeaseBusters. They will rescue you from your car lease. LeaseBusters, heroic? Maybe. Helpful? Totally. People would love to take over your car lease. For your lease relief, go to leasebusters.com. Our next guest is the host of Family Feud. Next week, he hopes to be hoisting, I don't know, whatever trophy they've come up for this thing. It is the face-off at TPC Toronto, Team Dubas versus Team Duffy. The one, the only, Jerry D joins us on Overdrive. How are you, Jerry?
Good. Can I swear on this or not?
Yeah.
I'll leave that up to Mark.
Yeah. I would.
What's up, guys?
I would love to host for Brian Hayes tomorrow, so I'm going to say no.
7 second delay. How are you?
We're good. We're looking forward. Like I said before, if the golf is as good as the kind of the verbal attacks on Twitter, the banter. It's going to be quite the round. We're giving you a platform here, so have at it.
It's awesome. It won't be as good. I mean, I think O'Neill and I and Dubas might. I'm really worried about Duffy because Duffy's coming out really hard with the chirping, and he's got pretty good chirps, but he has no idea how nervous he's going to be because I know that difference, right? I've played tournaments. Dubas has got the nerves of you're managing this Toronto Maple Leafs franchise. O'Neill has played in the NHL and in front of thousands with all that pressure. What has Duffy done that has ever had pressure? He is going to be
trade center.
Those other guys care. Dave, Bob, and he just passes the mic over. Your turn to speak, knowledgeable Bob. Your turn to speak, knowledgeable Dave. That's not nerves, man. So he is in big trouble, and he doesn't get it yet. And I love it. I saw a video of him swinging. He's got the little tendonitis. Man, you might want to really play that up now and get out of this and say, look, I got ulneritis. I can't, because he's going to be a puddle of nerves, and I can't wait.
Wow.
Well, I will tell you, Jerry, that there's already been an injury-related potential call today made. There may have been some back and forth. Yeah, you might not like this, but there's been a little back and forth between Mr. Duffy and myself today. If he had an alternate in case something happened, and apparently a guy, there's a guy who shot 60 on the PGA Tour today from Dundas, Ontario. Mackenzie Hughes' name has sort of been bantered. Apparently he's available Tuesday, there's some discussion about it. But, you know, to the great facility you're playing, TPC Toronto to Osprey Valley.
Yeah.
Have you played the course enough to have a home course advantage? And I will mention that it's possible that James Duffy has been there every single day since this match was outlined.
Yeah, because no clubs. Like, I think it's a public course, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, James goes every day.
Private courses don't take Duffy types. Guys with elbow things, like neck twitches when they swing, 4-6 hour rounds. So you got. But here's the thing: I played the North Course when I played in that event last year. Beautiful. I've not played the Hoot, which is what we're playing, and I must have 10 guys tell me how beautiful it is, and I've started to see pictures, and I can't wait because I have heard amazing things. And, you know, the TPC franchise is so strong. So I'm really excited. He can have that home course advantage. Once TVs are in his face, and I heard O'Neill's already sort of set that up too. Well, I'm a little bit nervous. Come on, man. Like, you're playing in front of more fans than any of us. So, but Duffy's in big trouble. He's nervous, trust me. These are nervous chirps that he's putting out on Twitter. It's going to be great.
He is the star of Team Dubas. Jerry D joins us on Overdrive, and a lot of people think that for your team to win, that you will have to take down Jeff O'Neill.
Yeah.
So how do you take down Jeff O'Neill? Is it physically in terms of the golf, or is it psychologically?
If I believed he was a real scratch golfer, I'd be concerned. But a lot of people throw the term scratch golfer around to guys that, you know, on the streets or in the pubs, and they don't know what they're talking about. I know what a scratch golfer is, and I don't think he's a scratch golfer. So I'm not, you know, I think he's a good golfer, and I'm not taking him lightly. But if he was a scratch, like a legit scratch, no, I don't think I wouldn't be able to take him down. There's no way. So
Jerry, who's the best hockey player that you've golfed with?
Tyler Bozak.
And how good is he?
What would he carry? Three or a four?
Now he's probably a one or two, but he was when I played with him, he was probably a four. Then he got down to a plus two. But, you know, those NHL guys, they do bomb it if they're players. But the best hockey golfer would be Bozak.
I have not played with Bozy, but I've played with Jeff a number of times. Jeff is the best hockey player. He'd be in the top three hockey players that I've played with. And I'd have Mike Camilleri in that group. You've played with
Camilleri. Camilleri, Corey, you know what? Camilleri right now is shooting like really good numbers. So yeah, guy, yeah. I played with Camilleri. Camilleri's up there too. I can't see O'Neill being at Camilleri's level.
Wow. Okay.
He is pretty close, I think, my friend.
We'll see.
He's pretty close.
I'll eat my words. If he's a real scratch, I'll believe it. But
and what's your style of chirping? What's your style of chirping? Go ahead. What's your style of chirping? Are you going hard at him? Are you softly chirping? Are you going hard?
There's a bit of history with him now. He has had a couple chirps on Twitter over the years. Mm-hmm. His most recent one, which was a good chirp. I was showing a video of my kids golfing in the basement, and one of the first things I bought was a golf simulator 10 years ago. And he said, "Nice house, but you're not that funny." It was a great chirp. So I've just held on to that one.
Okay.
So he went on Twitter pretty hard with that. It was a great chirp. I loved it. But there's going to be a lot of chirps. So I know hockey players, you guys have good chirps. You're great. Comics, another level.
I would hope so.
But we'll see. Yeah, me too. Right? So we'll see how it goes. I mean, hey, I give a good credit when a chirp's good, I'll give it. And, but at the end of the day, you know, like I texted Duffy, I'm like, this is so fun. And he texted me and I said, yeah, it's so fun. And, you know, and I have a great relationship with both those guys and getting to know Kyle through this. And, you know, we're raising 60 grand for charities and everybody gets that, the best part. But I think people are engaged in the fun chirps. And, you know, we all know what a fun chirp is before, and hopefully it stays that way. You can't be sensitive. I'll tell you, we all pretty have to have thick skin for this to be happening. Because if you got sensitive, it would start to get ugly.
Now you also need to be a good teammate, and you have the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Kyle Dubas. Will you spend any of the round giving your advice on how to run an NHL team? Because I know you have ideas.
Yeah, it's funny, on that call I had with him, we were joking around. I'm like, this is awesome. I said, I can't wait. I got so many things to tell you. So much stuff I see. <You know? laughs> And, but Kyle's a great, you know, I don't know him well, but, I really like what I see. He's having a great time with this. He's in a real high pressure situation, especially, you know, as Dave knows in this city, what that would be like. And we all know it. And, he's putting a lot of time to this for his charity. And I think, you know, in Toronto, I think he's probably the most interesting of the four of us, really, because it's such a high profile position. His job is like my job as a comedian, and those, you know, Jeff and James are, you can have fun on air. Kyle's got to be so careful of everything, right? Because he's always attacked, especially in the city. So I really admired how he's, you know, been dealing with this, having fun with it. But when we're on the golf course, it's, you know, it's golf. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm a Leaf fan. I'll probably be more talking about his golf game a little bit. Because on the golf course, he's going to have to listen to me. It's the only time in his life he might have to listen to stuff.
What do you know about his golf game? Of the four, he's the most unknown.
I've seen his swing because he sent me a video, and we all have the same person kind of involved in our lives and in our business that's kind of running this event, Jeff Dyson, who's great. And, you know, so we get videos, but he's got a good swing, grew up playing as a kid like, you know, Jeff did. And Jeff's a great player, and you know, and then you drift on other things. He drifted onto that, and probably the most high profile GM job in, you know, in sports, one of them anyway. So, you know, it's a pretty good looking swing. I've seen Duffy's, and I would take Dubas over Duffy all day.
But what about the gadgets?
And you know what? We might need all day by how long it takes him to hit the ball.
Yeah,
there's a bug. He said there was a bug on him. There was no bug. He's just backing away.
That's not good for O. He wants in and out in 2
hours.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I know that, right? So I can get an O-Dog's kitchen so quickly because I know O-Dog's going to be pissed already at how slow he is. So I think it's going to turn into Dubas, G, and O-Dog against Duffy. That's what I think is going to happen.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Jerry D joining us here on Overdrive. One of the many roles that you've had in your career is Jerry D sports reporter, which has returned on the NHLPA's social media platforms. What do we expect, and how have you evolved as a reporter? Are you a little more hard hitting on 60 Minutes, or is it kind of the same material from 10 years ago?
No, it's you know what, we talked about it. I think the brand was kind of well known, but it's hard doing a Zoom call to be that guy, and it's a little bit more 60 Minutes with a little bit of light Jerry sports reporter, and you know, kind of loose. But it was really, I thought, you know, we thought the idea was great to kind of just have a looser conversation with the players for the fans that you know, wasn't quite as, you know, hockey related or anything like that. So, like, you know, who's the most, it was kind of stuff I like to know, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, Pooley would know all this, and we don't, right? It's like, who plays the music in the room? Who's the most superstitious? Who's the guy that's the loudest? How do, you know, I'm like, what does this coach say before a game? Like, you know, none of us really as fans would really know. Like, I always think it's like, Rudy, do they come in and have this big speech? And they all laugh. They're like, well, so-and-so did, but so-and-so didn't. And mm-hmm. it's just kind of behind-the-scenes stuff, so... it's been fun. You know, now with the league getting ready, we've got a couple more lined up, and then I'm going to build this relationship with the NHLPA where I can go to the live events when that all happens down the road and get back into that character a bit and sort of bring it back. So it's been fun, and it's just the early stages, really.
Has anyone ever not reacted well to Jerry D sports reporting? Yeah. Like, not kind of gotten the shtick and was like, get out of here, man.
The one I can remember the most was Keith Tkachuk was kind of a bit confused when I got him, and then he bought him. But the one that I never got to air was Chelios, because Chelios was playing in Atlanta at 46, I think, and he went to the minors. And I remember thinking, what are you doing, right? So he was in the minors, and he got called up, Chris Chelios. So I went in the room, and I just treated it like, it was his first call-up.
Right.
You're 46, how exciting is this? Toronto Maple Leafs, you finally got your chance. And he goes, what are you talking about? I said, well, you come from the minors. I don't know the farm team, whatever. I said, the team. I said, now here you are. Atlanta calls you up. Maybe family here. He's like, are you joking, man? Like, do you know what's going on? And then I could just tell I wasn't going to get anywhere with it. So then I just kind of bailed on it. And you're like, kind of fizzled away, right? Because, you know, I didn't have time. I never explained to people what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And that was the only one I can remember. Messier at the Hall of Fame, I think his agent or publicist kind of gave him a nod, like a thumbs up, like, this guy's okay. Because, you know, Mess, right? Like, when so when Mess was at the Hall of Fame, he was there for someone else's induction. And I just said, Mark Messier, Jerry D sports reporter, why did you cry so much when you got inducted? That was all. That's exactly how I came into it. And the look on his face, I was actually, the only time I was ever scared for half a second was when I did that. And then someone must have given him an okay, and then it went great. But the Chelios was the only one where I'm like, God, I tried like three times. He didn't get it, and I moved on.
You know, you might have Jerry D, sports reporter, tucked in your pocket here halfway through the round and just pull it out in the 10th tee if you need it. Throw the hat on, bring the microphone out. Whichever guy on the other side you're having trouble with, try it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be in that mode the whole round. I really think it's just 4 hours. I don't know. Do they know what it's like to play 4 hours with a comedian that like that's just in his element, like chirping and his favorite sport? And you know, I don't, get me wrong, there's a competition here at the end of the day, and I know I got to beat O'Neill, and that's going to be tough. But you know, he's the favorite, fair enough. But we'll see what happens for both of us. Like, cameras don't make it any easier, that's for sure.
No. Well, we're all looking forward to seeing what happens on Tuesday. Best of luck in the face-off. And also, congrats on all the success with Family Feud. And we're looking forward to another season of that. So we appreciate you coming on the show. And be easy on Duffy. I have to say that as a colleague.
Quick Dave Poulin story. I never forgot. Didn't know Dave was bringing my high school hockey team down to Notre Dame. And he just looked after us immensely. So I know I thank Dave personally, but I wanted to get that out there. I always appreciated that. And he treated our kids like gold, and they never forgot that. So that's Dave Poulin right there.
He's a class act, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
That's great, Jerry. Yeah, awesome. It's have fun on Tuesday. It'll be great to watch.
Thanks for the support, guys. See ya.
Thank you. There, Jerry D from Team Dubas up against Team Duffy on Tuesday at TPC Toronto.
See, he's going to be such a unique handful.
I know.
Both with his play and his chatter. His chatter is, I mean, that's just, it's just different.
And O does like to play fast.
If he can wear on O, he can make, he can, you know, because Jerry's a really good player, but as I think he alluded to, O is, you know, is the best out of
the
four.
He's
different. He can maybe bring that gap down a little bit. If O by the end of the round says, you like, it's just exhausting playing with you, Jerry did his job. You know what I mean?
What if he says it's exhausting playing with you and he's talking to Duffy?
Well, that
what if O says that?
Yeah, we'll see about that. A lot of news coming from baseball, including the Blue Jays trying to play their season in Toronto. Scott Mitchell will join us next when Overdrive continues on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4. Mark Rowe and Dave Pullen with you. Baseball announcing earlier this week that they will begin their second spring training on July 1st, and we'll have a 60-game schedule, and with more on that. And what's happening with the Blue Jays, we're joined by Scott Mitchell, our TSN Blue Jays reporter. And Scott, you know, it should come to no shock that the Blue Jays want to play their games in Toronto and not Dunedin or Tampa, considering what's going on in that state and what's going on in a lot of states right now in the United States. How would you rate the optimism that the Blue Jays have on that actually happening this summer?
Well, that's a good question at this point, and I think we're going to get clarity on that in kind of the next couple of days as it goes through the federal government and they get their hands on the proposal, and they're reviewing that right now, and we'll see. And it's interesting because we knew a month ago that the Blue Jays would be in the worst position of any Major League Baseball team. We know the borders involved. We knew about the quarantine rule a long, long time ago. So that hasn't changed, and obviously the NHL has been doing a whole lot of negotiating and trying to convince the government as well that their aspect and their plan is safe. So Major League Baseball has a little bit of a different plan than most. They're still going to fly around. They're still going to be playing in home ballparks for the most part, other than the Blue Jays potentially. But it's a tough road. I think if you asked the Blue Jays a week ago, they would have told you they're playing in Dunedin. And then when the caseload in Florida has spiked this week, it's just really kind of sent them scrambling and trying to figure out what they can do. And now players are kind of saying that, hey, you know, maybe we don't want to go to Dunedin. So it's an interesting time for the Blue Jays, interesting time for baseball. And, you know, we'll see if the sport gets off the ground, and we'll see where the Blue Jays are when it happens.
Scott, with the positive tests that have come out in baseball, just like so many other leagues and sports that are happening right now, is the reaction essentially, this is kind of part of the plan? Because how could you ever go into what they're trying to accomplish in baseball and think that players won't test positive when everyone's coming together and you're trying to get to those next phases that will eventually lead to the season?
That's exactly it. When you test a kind of just a small percentage of the population, the baseball population, and you get tests, as we've seen over the past week, more today in Minnesota to the Twins, and it's part of the new landscape. And when you get these guys into camps next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, going through testing, everybody expects many more positive tests, and that's the way of the world right now, and especially when you look at the United States. So, baseball is going to put in some sort of COVID-19 injured list, reportedly, and we'll see what exact form that takes, but it's going to be able to move guys off and on, off the taxi squad, on the taxi squad, as these guys kind of get sick, get this virus. And people fully expect this to happen throughout the baseball season, so much so that even the owners, they know 60 games is what they're at right now. But, they even talked about 48 games, because if you need a week or two to pause this and regroup, it's going to be interesting. And everyone kind of rejoiced when they got that deal done earlier this week. But there's many more steps to go before we get to April or July 23rd, opening day, for sure.
Scott, the three leagues that put football over to the side, the three leagues that are closest to and in operation, the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball, have all handled this differently. And, you know, with hockey, arguably the most patient, waiting to name the hub cities, really, really meticulously planning how it was all going to happen. The NBA doing the same, albeit naming that they were going to Orlando. Baseball seems so caught up in all the labor situation going back and forth that it was almost like, wow, we've done a deal, now we got to play. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of planning was going on in the backgrounds, but it seems like the other two leagues were planning on playing and then waiting for the time to happen to play, whereas baseball got totally sidetracked with the labor situation that was going back and forth.
100%. And many people ask that about the health and safety protocols as well. Why were they negotiating those at the last minute when you've had 2 months to talk about them and 2 months to kind of know what you're facing? So it does feel like it's thrown together haphazardly. And even when you look at it from the Blue Jays perspective, and Major League Baseball is involved in this, so it's not the Blue Jays dragging their feet, but why are you going to the Canadian government a week away from needing this, changed? Why didn't you go a month ago to get the process going and put things in place? And, I would probably put that more on Major League Baseball because this is the plan right now. And it seems real interesting to have guys in home ballparks going to and from their own residence, flying around up and down the East Coast. It really screams disaster, and it's going to be interesting to see how it works if we even get to that point of games, because a lot of players are concerned once you get into camps next week and you have a bunch of tests, they're not confident, things won't unravel at that point. So, there's a lot of steps here, and when you look at Major League Baseball's plans, it definitely seems like it's the loosest of the major sports, and seems like there's a lot of things that can go wrong, to be honest.
So Major League Baseball will not have the hub system like the NBA is going to have in the NHL. But I guess each city is kind of like a bubble in a way. It's information that I'm sure they've talked a lot about. You just haven't heard about it as a fan. Do you know what those bubbles would be like? Like when you're a visiting player in a city, what are players going to be allowed to do?
Well, there isn't any real restrictions like that. I mean, players are allowed to kind of do what they want, and it's almost an honor system at this point. I mean, if players come to Toronto, that's going to be a little different because they're going to be under, intense scrutiny in what they're doing, especially if the city's open. We all know that Toronto's a destination spot for athletes on road trips, and, if it's a beautiful summer day and these players are up here and they're instructed to stay in the hotel or wherever they are, are they going to do that? I think that's what the federal government is working through right now. And, the testing needs to be done, and it's a 48 to 72 hour turnaround on testing. There's other ways to kind of identify symptoms and things like that. But when these guys are going to different cities, they're essentially going to be, quarantined by the team. But if they want to go out and they're in a city where there's a dinner spot available, technically they could do that. But, that's the thing. They have to be tested and given a saliva test when they go back in the stadium. And, it's interesting. I think we're all kind of flying by the seat of our pants or whether this is going to work, but it is definitely nothing like the NBA where they've told these players, here's what you can do, here's what you can't do. It's, we're going to play in home ballparks. You're going to be in your own condo, get to and from the stadium safely. And we're going to test the heck out of you guys to make sure that you don't contract this virus.
So actually, maybe a refreshing baseball question now for you, Scott. An absolute sprint, 60 games. Mm-hmm. Here we go, load it up. And who does that favor in any respect? Or is it, have you even been able to drill down and say, well, here could be an interesting team in a 60-game season?
Well, the two things that I think I can identify if I'm looking for sleeper teams, I mean, let's be real, the New York Yankees, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Tampa Bay Rays, you're loaded with depth. That is the biggest thing in this 60-game sprint. You have to have a whole lot of depth, and especially on the pitching side, to be able to get through this. And it's not the long season, but it's the quick ramp-up, and it's the fact that you're going to need a number of arms, especially to get through the first month of this. And, you're going to have injuries, you're going to have fatigue, you're going to have things that you can't foresee. So depth is the one thing. And then when you look at maybe a surprise team, think of high-end talent. And you think of that, and you think of the Blue Jays. Think of Bo Bichette. Think of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Who could potentially surprise and play at an MVP level for 30 or 40 games of a 60-game schedule? And you look around baseball, and there's a ton of young players that could carry teams in this situation. And one thing that, marks young players in every sport is inconsistency. And if you get that inconsistency on the right end of this at the beginning of the season, you could have some surprise teams really sitting there in the end where you really didn't expect, and they're probably going to be carried by some real, real strong individual performances.
Awesome stuff. Thank you for this, Scott.
Anytime, guys.
There's Scott Mitchell, our TSN Jays reporter, the 4 o'clock hour of Overdrive, brought to you by LeaseBusters. LeaseBusters will get you out of your car lease today. It's as easy as pie, a piece of cake, avoid penalties and early termination fees. Visit LeaseBusters.com. Could half the NHL be coming to Toronto this summer? More on the hub cities, the Hockey Hall of Fame class, and also a very different draft year for the NHL. Our director of scouting, Craig Button, joins us when Overdrive continues on TSN 1050 and the TSN app.